Welcome to Outside the Box with Ascendia USA, a podcast educating U.S.-based e-tailers on international shipping topics and how they can expand their global e-commerce footprint.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Outside the Box with Ascendia USA with my co-host, John Walsh.
Hello, hello.
Hello. We've got a very special guest today by the name of John Hodgy. John, you want to say hi real quick and then I'll talk a little bit about you?
Yeah. Thank you so much. Hey, everyone. How's everyone doing?
We're doing good. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, thank you. So, okay, everybody, it's a very special day today. Today's topic is the do's and don'ts of shipping subscription boxes internationally. John is an absolute expert about it, and I want to give you a little background of why we have John Hodgy on our podcast. So John is a subscription guru and a serial entrepreneur with a decade's worth of experience in the subscription space. He co-founded SubSummit, which is the first and only conference devoted exclusively to those who work in or alongside the subscription commerce industry. So SubSummit connects today's industry leaders, innovators, partners who are driving the rapid evolution of how consumers discover, buy, and experience new products. His background, and he and I go a long way back, but his background and think tanks paired with his entrepreneurial spirit has positioned him for success within the subscription industry. John has a serious passion for creative thinking, strategy, design, e-commerce, and more. And he also co-founded and served as president of Gentleman's Box, the first premier subscription service for men, for which yours truly was a subscriber for quite some time. I still have a large number of ties and socks. I rarely wear ties anymore. So if anybody's interested, please leave a comment or submit an inquiry to the Contact Us Today. I did change this part of the bio because it's an important highlight, but as a husband and father of two, John balances his professional and personal life with grace and humor. He has been recognized by Cranes Detroit as one of the 40 Under 40 award recipients in 2019 for his outstanding achievements and contributions.
Whew. And that was quite the bio.
When's the Nobel Prize coming, my man? When is the Nobel Prize coming?
Was this self-promoted?
No, I mean,
who wrote this?
Who wrote that bio?
Was it Cranes, maybe? I don't know who wrote that. It was amazing. Okay.
Wow, wait.
So,
and do you have one like that?
Glad to hear that you still have some Gentleman's Box items, you know, shuffling around the house somewhere.
They're there for sure. Oh,
he didn't say where, John.
I know. There's probably, true. You know, the junk drawer of his kitchen or something. Who knows?
Charvon could probably edit this next. So Nixon pulled a watch out of the drawer the other day and goes, "Dad, where did you get this from?" And I said, "That was a Gentleman's Box watch." And he goes, "I missed that box." And I was like, "Yeah, I know, buddy. It's been a while, but I know."
Okay. I remember you sending me videos of your kids opening that box, and that was really nice.
Christmas time. You remember by the tree?
You re-gifted your kids a sub box?
It was advertisement for.
Oh, come on.
He could use it for advertising. Wow. Okay. I had really cute kids. I still have cute kids, but they changed. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. He was an ambassador. There was an affiliate link there.
An ambassador.
It was bono too, unfortunately. All right. So John is a fantastic resource. And so, you know, for the listeners out there, what we focus on is really helping, you know, again, the online retailers, subscription box companies, marketplace sellers, 3PLs, if you will, really help them when it comes to navigating the e-commerce cross-border parcel delivery landscape. So again, I'm going to just go back to, we're going to talk today about the do's and don'ts of shipping subscription boxes internationally. So we've got John Hodgy, John Walsh. So I'm going to say John, and I'm going to have to figure out how to navigate that. JW. So
there you go.
JW and I were looking today, John, at some really interesting statistics. So just get your feedback on what you're seeing out there. But I want to start with this number here that we discovered today, that the subscription box market ending 2023 is an approximate $33 billion market. I mean, I remember the first SubSummit. I mean, it's insane. So tell us a little bit about that. What growth areas do you see in the subscription, the physical box space? I don't really want to spend any time today on digital, if that's okay. Talk more about the box market in particular.
Yeah, I mean, look, it almost seems like there's a subscription box out there for everything. Sponges, toilet paper, men's fashion accessories. The food and beverage space seems to be a space that is growing exponentially year over year. I think what you'll find in the subscription box space is anybody that's incorporating some sort of product that is replenishable and depletable is seeing a lot of success. And, you know, e-commerce and consumer brands that have a product that is consumable and depletable and replenishable are looking for ways to pivot into the subscription model. And so that's where you're seeing a lot of growth. I mean, yeah, you know it. SubSummit, first year, 200 people. This year, on pace for 2,000 people. So we've been seeing growth across the subscription industry as a whole.
Yeah, and congrats to you and Chris and the team on the success that you guys have had as well. You know, and I look to myself and between myself and my wife, you know, the number of subscriptions that we have. And I mean, every house is filled with something at this point. JW is just talking about his wife just got something the other day. I forget already what the name is, but, we don't need to promote any names here on this. But more importantly, it's just to talk about, you know, people look at, oh, I think oftentimes that I'll talk to people that are outside the industry and they'll say something like, is this, you know, oh, is it a fad? You know, the subscription box. I'm sure you've heard that. It is certainly not.
No, it's certainly not. I mean, like there's always a time within every industry where the question is like, is this bubble going to burst? We're not seeing that, right? It's not a fad. It's only growing exponentially. I mean, the trends, you're saying $33 billion in the subscription box space, but the subscription industry as a whole is going to hit $2 trillion in the next few years. So it's not a fad. I think we're seeing more and more. Again, it's nice to see, but you even see some of these enterprise and legacy brands figuring out ways to kind of pivot into the subscription model, because who doesn't love recurring revenue?
That I couldn't agree more. And the amount of companies and let me know if, you know, this echoes with you a little bit too, with you log in and see, you know, subscribe and save functions on half the people you're going to buy from now, which is in its own way a subscription model. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you go to buy a vitamin from a vitamin company or whatever, and you know, you realize you're going to use that every month, subscribe and save, boom, it's there. You know what I mean? So that's something too. Okay. So we want to talk today though about international. One thing I've had the great pleasure of working with is a number of subscription-based brands to really help them get their box to subscribers that are located outside the United States. There are plenty of challenges in doing so, but there's also, I think, this weird veil that people look at of saying that it's so daunting. I don't know how to get into it. I don't know, you know, what to do, where to start. You know, this is we'll be on, you know, 5-6 episodes at this point, and we've talked pretty extensively about where we would make suggestions for top 3 markets, including, you know, one, let's look at English speaking countries, right? Yep. Let's look at, you know, Canada. Then we're going to look at, you know, UK and Australia. So you yourself were my contact that I worked really closely with when it came to working with Gentleman's Box. Okay, so while you guys owned the brand and you really had your finger on the operation as a whole. And so my question is, you know, what were some critical data points when it came to international or Canadian subscribers that you focused on in terms of whether it was, you know, profitability, you know, customer experience, ease of use, transit times, that type of thing?
I mean, it's really easy to say all those buckets, to be honest. When we were thinking about shipping internationally, I think the number one thing that came to mind right off the rip was like cost. Right? What does it cost to ship internationally? And in cost, there's so many different factors you have to think about. The size of the box, the weight of the box, what are the goods inside? You know, do you want to cover the cost of delivery duties paid to the consumer? And then all that has this like trickle effect on the experience the consumer is going to have. And you don't want them to stop at their local post office and pay some sort of invoice, right? That doesn't seem like a seamless or a really good delivery experience for them. So there's a lot of factors, but I think cost was probably the first and foremost, the number one thing that we thought about first, because Gentleman's Box, we were shipping obviously starting off domestically for $25 a month. Right. And for what we were delivering, which we promised 100, you know, three to four times the value, it was how are we going to deliver, you know, 3 to 4 times the value in the products without sacrificing quality, of course, because that's the one thing you never want to do. You don't want to sacrifice quality so that you can bake in more shipping costs within your box. So without sacrificing quality, we're at $25. How do we get this out internationally? And so we had to evaluate the costs. And I think that was probably the number one thing that we thought about when trying to kind of enter into international water.
I had two questions down that road. So the first question is, all the sub box providers, they use a 3PL traditionally, right? So when you're choosing that, two things. So what's your thought process of choosing that provider, number one? Because there's a lot of cost involved, pick and pack, all that stuff they're going to get you on overrides and things like that. The second would be cost containment, because rates go up 5-6% every year, and you're trying to keep your box price within a manageable thing so you don't lose, you know, customers. So how do you recommend to your people that you talk to in the industry, how do you recommend to handle that? Well, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Two great questions. Cost containment. Let me just address that first. You know, when you open up your doors internationally, you're going to start to hit a market that you were not going after initially. So the goal there and the hopes is that the acquisition of more subscribers start to roll in, right? And with the acquisition of more subscribers and growing your community and your subscriber base means you now leverage the ability of scaling and, you know, ordering products, whatever it is for your box, whether it's ordering more boxes, it's ordering more products in the box at scale, your costs start to go down. So we always found that it offset that anyway. So the cost of containment with the rates going up every year, it was never an issue because we were growing anyways. We were scaling our prices across the board for the product, the packaging were going down. And so it was usually and typically in most cases an offset. Now, you know, choosing, you know, for a lot of subscription brands, there's like a point where I always at least suggest when to kind of graduate, if you will, and move on to a 3PL. I think that early on, most folks are, and if they're in the startup phase, they're taking it on themselves. A lot of 3PLs are not going to take on somebody with 100 boxes, or it's just not cost effective to work with a 3PL when you only have 100 boxes or a couple hundred a month. So you get to a point where it does seem cost effective to switch to a 3PL. And when you do start to switch to a 3PL, which at some point I think everybody should, because your whole goal is to grow your company. Think about the marketing and the creatives to grow and scale your company and kind of take that load off your shoulders. So when thinking about working with a 3PL.
Hurdle rate, child. What was it per day, your hurdle rate? Like you would recommend that move?
For us, it was monthly, because a lot of subscription box companies, it's not so much what they're doing on a daily basis, it's what they're doing on a monthly basis, because a lot of the subscription companies have a bulk renewal day on a monthly basis.
Yep.
And so maybe that's, you know, the 5th through the 10th is their peak period of shipping, and the rest of the month is a few packages here and there. So really, we looked at it as a monthly basis. When we hit 2,000 subscribers on a monthly basis, well, 1,500 to 2,000, we started to shift over to a 3PL.
Gotcha.
Some do sooner nowadays. I think this was 2014 when we started Gentleman's Box. So it was 2015-ish, 16 when we looked to a 3PL. And obviously every 3PL is different in terms of what they're bringing in terms of a requirement for a minimum. A lot of 3PLs nowadays have lowered their minimums because they've found cost-effective strategies internally to be able to handle lesser quantities on a monthly basis. But like the 3PL you work with, you want to make sure that they, in my opinion, have a great relationship with their carriers as a whole, domestically and internationally. But while your international carrier needs to be able to support, if you're working with an international carrier independently, you want them to be knowledgeable in the international space and be able to support you and help you mitigate risks. But if you look at that independently, you're hoping that the 3PL is also getting that same level of service from the international carrier so they can pass that on to you.
Gotcha.
There was a lot that was brought up there that I'm like scribbling ideas in my head, scribbling ideas down here that to highlight. But, you know, one of the resounding themes that I've seen, whether it's with, again, just an online shipper, you know, e-com company, subscription box company, subscription has almost always been resoundingly about this, but customer experience. You know, anytime I am in conversation with more of a high level subscription box brand or subscription based brand, a lot of times these terms that maybe that you can touch on, John, while we're here is, you know, subscriber churn, LTV, and then we can kind of peel that back and bring it around to, you know, again, we're focused on the international U.S. outbound logistics, but why logistics is an important factor in impacting those areas.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the customer experience is across the entire journey of a brand from the moment they come across your ad on social media to the moment they land on your website, purchasing the product. And it doesn't stop when they purchase the product. It's what's the post-purchase experience. And that's actually a huge factor in, it plays a huge role in churn, right? Like if I order a product and, you know, we live in this world where we're expecting things to arrive, well, we expect and we hope that it arrives in 2-3 days, right?
Right.
But in a world where we are expecting things to be delivered so quickly, if it arrives 3-4 days later than your expectations, that's a horrible experience. You haven't even received the product yet. And so you're already judging your experience based on, say, transit time. So post-purchase experiences, whether it's on the logistics side or the fulfillment side, even the way that you're sending over information from the tracking information, the emails, it's all very important post-purchase. But, you know, on the logistics side of things, I think every consumer wants to see in real time where their package is the second that they make that purchase. So from the moment it leaves a certain person's warehouse, where it is every step of the way. I've always recommended to brands that I've spoke to that you make sure that the carrier that you're working with, the service that you're using has, you know, door-to-door tracking. Because if you don't have door-to-door tracking, the moment it enters into the country, if tracking's lost, you know, the customer is kind of like left in the dark. And that creates a horrible Sure. experience for the customer because they don't know what's going on with their package. Is it going to arrive in 2 days, 3 days? And sometimes even the merchant doesn't even know when it enters into the country, like what's happening with this package. So I think Right. There's a lot of facets of logistics that play into the post-purchase experience that are very important to own in on.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to part one, episode 5, Outside the Box with Ascendia USA podcast. Stay tuned for part 2 dropping May 22nd.
If you want to support our podcast, the number one thing you can do is share it on your social media and tag Ascendia.
That helps us get the word out, and we really appreciate it.
Be sure to subscribe and download our podcast. If you want to learn more about today's topic, email us at ecommerce.usa@ascendia.com and check back frequently for new discussions on e-commerce shipping to Canada and worldwide.